I wonder if you're someone who likes to return to the same place for your holidays or for a day trip. Whenever you have your choice, where do you want to go to? Is it a particular location that you know well because of the memories and familiarity? Or do you actually enjoy going somewhere new? Perhaps if you do like somewhere that's more familiar, you choose to return somewhere because of the investment that you've made. It might be that you purchase a caravan and pitch it at a particular site so that you know you're going to be there for the next 10, 20, 30, 40, or 50 years. And if we are honest with ourselves, we all have places that we like to return to. And we know the routines that we need to go through to get us there. We're familiar with what to pack, what to bring by way of equipment. We don't even need to use a map or signs because we know exactly where we're going because we know the route so well. These places and the routines that they create are probably enjoyable, and we eagerly anticipate our return to them. Whenever you look at the story of Genesis, it's a bit like this. There's a bit of to-ing and fro-ing. Egypt is always on the horizon throughout the story, particularly the story of Joseph, because Egypt was the world's superpower at that time. And where in the previous chapter of chapter 42, we saw the children of Israel, Jacob's children, traveling down to Egypt and home again, we now see in this chapter a repeat of that journey, but it's a very different journey this time with a very different outcome. And we must remember that we're building to something. This is not the story in and of itself. These chapters pull together to tell us the story of what God is doing so that his people will be a blessing to the nations. So the children of Jacob, his sons, had gone down to Egypt in the year 1878 BC to get food because there was a famine in the world. And we're told that three different times in these passages that the famine that Egypt was experiencing was known throughout the whole world. And so the family of Israel were suffering again. But the whole reason why they were able to get grain in the first place was because of Jacob's son, whom he thought was now dead, Joseph. Pharaoh had that sleepless night, you may remember. And on that sleepless night, it was only Joseph who was able to interpret the dream. It was a God-given dream that would tell Egypt what they were to do. And it turns out to be the only place in the whole world to have food at that time. And if you're here last week, you'll know how that went. The brothers didn't recognize Joseph, but he immediately recognized them. And for the first time in over 20 years, the events that brought Joseph to Egypt became clear to him, and he heard the truth of what really happened on that day. He gave the brothers the grain that they were coming down to purchase, but not without putting them through the mill themselves. He accused them of being spies, and the whole reason for doing this was so that he could get the information that he needed without revealing his own identity. He imprisoned them all on the accusation of espionage, and was only going to send one of them home, but he changed his mind and kept Simeon in prison and let the rest return. Joseph made it clear that they shouldn't return unless they bring their youngest brother with them. And so, providing the proof that was needed, that indeed this was one family and not simply a bunch of spies from Canaan. And in Genesis chapter 42, verses 19 to 20, we read, "If you are honest men, let one of your brothers stay here in prison while the rest of you go and take grain back to your starving households. But you must bring your younger brother to me so that your words may be verified and that you may not die." And this they proceeded to do. It's quite the predicament. Food doesn't last forever. And of course, although we know how long this famine's going to last for, the children of Israel don't. They're not going to be able to get more food from Egypt. They're not going to be able to get more food from Joseph unless their younger brother comes with them. Of course, whenever they got back to Jacob and reported everything that had happened, it was Jacob who quite literally threw the toys out of the pram. It's he now who puts their family in jeopardy. Where he was once so willing to send them down to Egypt to get food, he was now unwilling, because he didn't want to risk his youngest son's life. He perceived that what happened to Simeon would happen to Benjamin. Of course, the overshadow of Joseph and what happened to him those many years before, what he believed had happened to him. It turns out the father didn't care about his son Simeon at all. He was the sacrificial lamb to rot in a prison in Egypt so that Benjamin would remain safe at home. Joseph and Benjamin, let me remind you, were the two sons born to Jacob's favorite wife. They were always going to be the favorites. And as we now look back on Jacob's life, we see that indeed his life was shaped by favoritism. And now we see it at quite literally the expense and risk of his own family. So they eat, they drink, they're probably merry for just about a year. And then, of course, the food runs out and another year has gone without a harvest in Canaan. The land that was to be flowing with milk and honey doesn't produce what it was expected to. And so the question comes, what are these brothers now going to do? And more pertinently, what is the leader of the family going to do? What will Jacob decide? We know he's a selfish man. We know the conditions of what it means to get more grain. So what's he going to do? Well, Jacob has to make that decision. The food is consumed. There's now an urgency that they need to return to Egypt to get more. And it is Jacob who instructs them to go in verse 2 of chapter 43. He says, so when they had eaten all the grain that they had brought from Egypt, their father said to them, go back and buy us a little more food. This should surprise us. Because here's the man that was refusing to send his son. He's waited a whole year. And now he's saying, go back. And it's Judah. Judah steps up to the plate and he reminds his father of the conditions of their return. Because in verse 3 he says, the man warned us solemnly, you will not see my face again unless your brother is with you. The man, Joseph, he is quite literally the storekeeper of the food. Nothing goes out without him approving it. So they can't simply rock up again and show their faces. There's going to be consequences if they don't meet the conditions that were set by the ruler of Egypt. Now, I don't believe Jacob forgot this bit of information. I think he was choosing to ignore it. But Judah stands up to his father and says that they will not go unless Benjamin goes with them. It seems that the one son who is in favor with his father remembers Simeon more and cares for his welfare and the welfare of the whole family rather than Jacob, who should have been the one with these concerns. But Jacob's selfish heart appears again, and we see this all as trouble on him, or that's how he perceives it. I'm the one who's troubled. Look at me. Why is this all happening to me? He doesn't even look to see that his other sons and grandchildren are starving. He's more concerned about himself. They're all hungry because of the famine, and they're all aware of Simeon's position in that Egyptian jail. And the moment of change comes in Judah's speech to his father in verses 8 to 10. Then Judah said to Israel, his father, send the boy along with me, and we will go at once so that we and you and our children may live and not die. I myself will guarantee his safety. You can hold me personally responsible for him. If I do not bring him back to you and set him here before you, I will bear the blame before you all my life. As it is, if we had not delayed, we could have gone and returned twice. Here is the caliber of the one that we've been waiting for, and the one who will actually lead this family. He is willing to take a stand and do what is right. He is the one who guarantees Benjamin's safety, and in doing so demonstrates faith in a perspective other than doom and gloom. He's a realist in recognizing that the family would have been so much better off if only their father had chosen to consider the whole situation much sooner and not been stubborn in his own selfish choices. And so Jacob finally agrees. And the sons are dispatched with Benjamin and a whole arrangement of fine produce to demonstrate the sincerity of the family is sent with them, as well as double the money, not only to buy new grain, but to replace the silver that was found in their sacks. But we also now see a depth to Jacob that we haven't seen in this story since chapter 37 so far. Where the name of God has been absent in Canaan, now it is Jacob who draws his sons back to some recognition of faith and the protecting and the providing that God will give. In verse 14, Jacob says, "And may God Almighty grant you mercy before the man, so that he will let your older brother and Benjamin come back with you. As for me, if I am bereaved, I am bereaved." And here's a complete change of heart. Simeon is now thought of